Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the June 10, 2018 session, focusing on 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 13, through chapter 5, verse 5. Never give up. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
So we record each week with Bert, and we see each other over the screen because, you know, clearly he's in Mississippi, I'm in Kentucky. But last weekend, got to see Bert in person because he was here to do our school's commencement address. And we had a great time hearing Bert, and we had brunch together, didn't we, Bert?
We did.
It was lovely. It was an old truck stop that's been converted.
Great pancakes.
Yeah, they're so good. They're so fluffy, you don't even know you're eating them.
Oh, I knew. They were great.
Well, we really enjoyed having you in town.
Thank you. I was glad to do it. A lot of fun.
Yeah, and you got to see Crystal.
Yes.
Yeah. Got to see lots of old friends. Not that Crystal's old, but old friends like you and make some new ones.
Yes. Well, it was great having you here. Well, Bert, clearly we've not heard enough from you, so I wonder if you might help us get a start in this passage.
Well, I'll try. You know, I saw a cartoon the other day written for ministers, and it said pastoring a church would be easy, except for the three P's: people, people, and people. And if I didn't know any better, I would have thought that Paul had written that. Well, he's a P too, right? Anyway, the people in the churches that Paul started were always giving him fits. As Eugene Peterson puts it, for anyone operating under the naive presumption that joining a Christian church is a good way to meet all the best people and cultivate smooth social relations, a reading of Paul's Corinthian correspondence is the prescribed cure. The Christians in Corinth attacked Paul's motives. They criticized his leadership skills. They questioned his integrity and his credentials. They undermined his authority. Now, if you've ever been in any church long enough, you know someone who has gotten so frustrated with the pastor, with the leadership, or with people in general in the church, that they've just thrown their hands up in disgust and defeat and walked out. If you've been around professional ministers long enough, you probably know one or two pastors who have grown so frustrated with the church laity and other leadership that they have literally thrown their hands up in disgust and defeat and walked out. And yet, in our text today from Paul's second letter to the church at Corinth, Paul writes in verse 16, "We do not lose heart. We never give up. We never become discouraged." These are powerful words from someone that I think did lose heart from time to time, was discouraged from time to time. Sometimes life hits us hard, and sometimes people hit us really hard too. And yeah, we want to give up. We want to walk away. Sometime life hits so hard that life loses its meaning. Now, I don't care what Paul said a few verses back, which we talked about last week. We do become troubled and perplexed, and we do feel crushed. And Paul, who knew all those feelings, tells us to keep going. Paul tells us why to keep going. Paul encourages us to imagine something greater. By imagining something greater, our spirits get lifted a little bit. Paul reminds us of what is to come. We are focusing on things that are seen, and Paul calls us to remind ourselves of the things that are unseen. We're focused on things that are temporary, and Paul calls our attention back to things eternal. I think Paul knows to do these things because Paul has focused on things temporary. Paul has focused on things that were seen and experienced the depths of despair and had to call his attention back to things that are unseen and things that are eternal. Even as our body is torn down, this earthly tent falls apart, Paul says. God gives us the Spirit and shows us glimpses of what is to come. It reminds me of Viktor Frankl's powerful book, Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl, if you don't know, is a Holocaust survivor and a renowned psychologist. He says if we find within ourselves a why to keep going, then we can endure any how things are. If we can imagine a better world that's coming, whether it's tomorrow or whether it's in eternity or whatever, if we can imagine a different future, if it's tomorrow or 20 years from now or in eternity, if we can imagine something else, we can endure any hardships we are experiencing right now. Profound words from experience of someone in the hell of the Holocaust. I think Paul is offering us hope in these verses. I think Paul is calling us to use our imaginations. I think Paul is giving us a why so that we can endure how things are now. Listen to these closing verses from this text, from the Message translation. For instance, we know that when these bodies of ours are taken down like tents and folded away, they will be replaced by resurrection bodies in heaven, God-made, not handmade, and we'll never have to relocate our tents, our bodies again. Sometimes we can hardly wait to move, and so we cry out in frustration. Compared to what's coming, living in these conditions around here seem like a stopover in an unfurnished shack, and we're tired of it. We've been given a glimpse of the real thing, our true home, our resurrection bodies. The Spirit of God whets our appetite by giving us a taste of what's ahead. God puts a little of heaven in our hearts so that we never settle for less.
Any of you ever thought about giving up? He laughs.
And can you give some parameters to that?
In the last week?
Every day.
Yeah, you know, and I've found out by talking around with many other ministers who've been at it longer than I have that a lot of us have those moments, like the guy who was running for vice president with Ross Perot.
Oh, wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, you know, he gets up there and he says, "Who am I? What am I doing here?"
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a common experience for a lot of pastors at some point or another, at least the ones I talk to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know who said it, but I remember the phrase, "All the mean people go to church." Mm. And that's not to say all church people are mean people, but you know, I mean, we chuckle, but... You know, it's an unfortunate truth that as we arrive together in the community, we bring all of our baggage with us and our faults and our anger, our resentment, all the things that are problematic we bring with us. It makes church an interesting place. Mm-hmm. Kind of like our families, right?
Yeah. Impressive that Paul never gave up on them.
Yeah,
I'm sure they were ready to give up on Paul many times, and they probably wished they had been able to push him to the edge to the point he would turn and walk away. But he never gave up on them. And while he's at some points berating them after they've berated him, but after he berates them and corrects them and all that kind of stuff that he does, he always tries to encourage them back in. Mm. I don't know. You know, I we say this every time we have a Pauline passage. You know, the older I get, the more I've grown to respect Paul, whereas I used to really dislike Paul, because I don't think I understood Paul very much.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the way that Paul's been twisted by the church and used. But I do agree with that. You asked if I'd ever thought about giving up. I mean, yes. I mean, there are times that even in ministering to people who have so many things going on for them, you know, there have been times that I'm like, and I'm a really hopeful person. And I like to, like, even to the point that, you know, a lot of times when I've prepared sermons, I'm like, oh gosh, is this too Pollyanna? Like, it, you know, I'm hope, there's hope. But there have been times sitting with clients that I just think, oh my gosh, like, I don't see how anything's going to change. Yeah. This seems hopeless. I don't tell them that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
If you're listening to this podcast, you know, but it's really interesting because, you know, Bert talked about those little, like the little glimmer of heaven. And it's funny because I can look at in my ministry and times that I've wanted to give up, there's this little glimmer of heaven in my own personal life. When I wanted to give up, there was a little glimmer of heaven. I haven't shared this often. I don't know that I've shared it on here, but we had two miscarriages in between our children. And I still remember after the last one, we had just moved back to Louisville, and I was sitting on the floor in the bedroom. We were getting ready to go to a Halloween parade with my oldest child, and she was, I guess, like 3 at the time. And I was like, God, where are you? I was like, you're not here, because we've experienced such incredible loss, and I can't see you, and you're not here, and this is awful, and I hate being here. And I wasn't suicidal or anything like that, but I was miserable. And it's funny, because a week and a half later, I took a pregnancy test, and Elijah is here today. And I'm not saying that happens every time for everybody, but it was like there was that glimmer that God was there and God listened. But I think even if Elijah never was, I think God would have given me another glimmer. Mm-hmm. And I think God does that for us. I think God sees where we need those little glimpses of hope and those little glimpses of heaven. And I see it in ministry all the time. It's a privilege to be able to encounter that, to experience it in my own life, but more so to encounter it with other people and to be a partner in that. And I'll say one more thing, because I just was thinking that maybe that's what Paul's calling the church to be, is that partner that helps share those glimmers, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think, you know, and maybe that's why Paul was so hard on the Corinthians. Like, come on, guys. Like, hello. You're supposed to be glimmering out there, and you're not doing anything. So, you know, I think maybe, and I think that's where we miss it. We should shine. No, I mean, you know, I think that's where we miss it. Those opportunities that we have as the body of Christ to offer those things and to be used by God in those ways.
And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, we all come into our churches, as David said earlier, with all of our baggage, with all of our psychological issues and emotional baggage and our control issues. And we all see church in different ways. And so we all want to do church in the way I see church, which is different from what you see church doing. And I want music this way, and I want the structure this way, and I want the liturgy this way, and I want the prayers this way. I want the pastor to say this kind of sermon every week, and I don't like it when you do that kind of sermon every week. And I don't think we should be involved with this kind of ministry, or we're spending too much money in that ministry. And so we all come in with our little things, and we miss the whole crux of it, as Crystal was saying, is to be glimmers of hope when everything else is falling apart. And we're just trying to build our own little kingdoms, religious organizational kingdoms. And I think that's what Paul was doing, you know. Each one got their little groups together, and then he would leave and go off and start another church somewhere, and he'd come back, and they're all fighting about this thing and fighting about that. He said, that's not what matters. You forget. You know, we talked about the other day, last week, about the treasure in the jars of clay, and you know, the pots are cracking, and we're all concerned about who's paying somebody to straighten the photos in the hallway correctly and that kind of stuff. It can be very disheartening. We all know people who have been great pastors or great ministers or great leaders, lay leaders, in a church at some point or another, and who now have nothing to do with organized communities of faith because of people. They've thrown their hands up and walked away because they weren't allowed to glimmer or glisten, and people around them weren't glistening, glimmering, whatever Crystal's word was.
I like glimmer.
Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer.
You know, as we were talking about that, I think for me as a minister, the place where that all fades away is when we have communion and serving communion, and each individual comes forward and, you know, receives the bread and receives the juice, and that for me is when each person starts to shine. But it's like this collective glow. I know I'm probably like pushing the metaphor even further, but I don't know, there's something beautiful about that, because that's kind of the leveling field. That's when the who straightens the pictures in the hallway doesn't matter, and whatever ministry we're doing, that doesn't matter. What matters is that we're a community, a beloved community, who comes together and joins together at this table where all are called and all are welcome. And we don't really get to say, I think people try maybe, but ultimately it's Christ who calls us. So for me as a minister, I think that's the place that I see the meshing of the community and it coming together. And oh, that we would take that out. Do what?
I say coming together is hard for us.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of the reasons we've already discussed, but I really think it's one of the key roles that the church is called to play is to bring us together in spite of all the things that are there to try to pull us apart, to try to divide us or separate us. And certainly it's a role that as the church plays that role at whatever level we can, we stand out in our societies because so much of our world is designed to separate us and divide us and to sort us. Mm-hmm. And for the church to be a place that is looking to something bigger, something beyond, you know, I think we can read this passage and mm-hmm. think, oh, you know, Paul's talking about the afterlife, and surely that's part of it. But Paul is also calling us to keep our eye on the bigger picture that, you know, as he says in verses 17 and 18, right? For this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all measure because we look not at what can be seen, but what cannot be seen. For what can be seen is temporary, what cannot be seen is eternal. So there are things that are bigger that can keep us together in spite of differences. We just don't always want to look at them.
I love this idea that Bert touched on in his introduction about imagination, the idea of being able to, and David, that's what you were talking about, right? This idea of being able to imagine something beyond. And I often feel concerned that we don't give our children enough time to engage their imaginations. My son, both of my kids are pretty creative. I'm not sure where they got it from, but I've never felt incredibly creative the way that they are. Every once in a while you ask your kids things like, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? And one day Liam said to me, I want to make something new out of something old. That's all he said. I mean, there was no explanation. That is what he wants to do. But sometimes he does things like that. He'll put wings on a car and it's a flying car. So like he's made something new out of something old. And I just think to myself, don't ever lose that imagination. Because people who think that way, who think like children, mm-hmm. are the ones who change this world in really wonderful ways. They're the ones who can see beyond what's in front of us and mm-hmm. imagine solutions and fixes and new ways of being that elevate all of us. And so I think that one of the roles of the church is to inspire the imaginations of its congregants so that we can all, for a moment, imagine what it would be like if this all worked. And I think, right, like, so, oh, all of it's coming together, right? So Crystal, at the table, mm-hmm. it's where we imagine what it looks like when we're all sitting equal around the table, sharing the bread and sharing the cup. It is that moment to imagine, you know, what if? And then if we can imagine what if, we can begin to chart a path to get to it.
Well, we need to hear these words so we do not lose heart. They're good words, and it's so easy to lose heart, to give up. But we are called to be people of perseverance. And part of the idea of faith is something that is steadfast, that remains in spite of the waves and the darkness and the struggles that we inevitably face, both as people and as congregations. And I really appreciate Nikki's ideas that kind of really draw a lot of our conversation together around imagination. Certainly, God is a God of imagination and likely can imagine a future for our churches and our world that is amazing. And maybe, if we spend a little more time being like our children, we might imagine a bit of that as well and begin to not only not lose heart, but make these things a reality. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.